Right now on Last Call, bank job shares of New York Community Bank crashing, then surging after a former Treasury secretary and other investors give it $1 billion. Congresswoman Maxine Waters is here taking it to the people. Can the president sell his economy? Tomorrow's State of the Union, we're going to show you the results of a shocking new poll. Das Problems. Germany's economy in big trouble, but that could actually be good news for your money. Tesla expanding its superchargers to other automakers, but could that hit some speed bumps? And a Google engineer charged with secretly working with two Chinese companies? We have the late-breaking details on that. And we love gold. Precious metal doing something it has never done before. Huh. All that and more over the hours. Belly up or buckle up. Last Call is up right now. Well, good evening here. Good afternoon out west, everybody. I am Brian Sullivan. All that and more coming up across the hour. But first up on Last Call, AI dreams versus AI reality. There are a few things that seem to be going in wildly different directions. First up, the AI dreams. Many of these stocks just keep printing money. NVIDIA, AMD, TSM, and of course, Supermicro Computer, hitting new high after high every day. It's been an epic run for the ages. And it's all built on the idea that artificial intelligence will take over the world and maybe our lives. And these companies will just keep growing forever. It's a beautiful dream, kids. And it may come true. Yeah. Because there's also the harsher growing reality, as we are finding out that even with all the hype, at least right now, some of those dreams may not be ready for prime time. And there's been a growing list of less than dreamy realities lately. A Microsoft engineer just told CNBC that the company's AI tool called Copilot would often create violent or overly sexual images unprompted. It's a dirty boy. It also warns that Copilot violates some copyright laws, potentially making you, the user, subject to lawsuits or fines. All this comes after Google's Gemini AI bot caused outrage by rendering wildly historically inaccurate renderings of people. Google admitting that its AI tool, quote, missed the mark. And while spending billions, companies are still trying out and figuring out how to make money from artificial intelligence. Of course, we're not taking a side here. AI could indeed be the greatest thing on the internet since the internet. But given some of the recent headlines, and that the stocks just keep going up, up, up on the other side, we thought it good to make you aware of both sides of the AI headlines. Let's talk about that and kick off the show with Steve Kovac and Deepwater Asset Management's Gene Munster. Gene, is it possible that the AI story could be in the near term looking a little more like science fiction than science fact?
If I define the near term between now and when NVIDIA reports their April quarter, which should be like May 1st, I think that you're going to see some wringing of hands about the pace and the trajectory of this. I think once NVIDIA prints their quarter, that's what this whole rally is all about. That's what's pulling up AMD, TSM. I think once they print their quarter, their April quarter, I think that that's going to get investors back into this vortex of fear of missing out. And so this is topical. The key point that investors should focus in related to what's going on with the news with Microsoft and Google last week and what does it mean for AI, mm-hmm. It just really highlights the difference in how these two companies are approaching AI. In Google's case, they're being too conservative. That's why you got these inaccuracies. In Microsoft's case, they're being really aggressive, and that's why you get this objectionable content. And so I think that those challenges or those differences are going to cause some ebbs and flows in terms of how investors think about it in the near term.
Yeah, Steve, I mean, listen, again, it's kind of like you and I were talking earlier, self-driving cars. Everyone's right. Like, well, it's coming and it's going to happen and that's that. And then, of course, a few of them crash and now there's some problems. That last 5% is always the hardest with any new technology. And AI is amazing, but these headlines are pretty scary as well. They'll fix it, But I just wonder if it will take longer than we think. I don't know.
And this is the big question. So I cover Microsoft quite deeply.
Which is why you're sitting here
right
now.
This is why I'm
sitting
here.
You're not a random guy off the street.
Exactly.
That we just threw on television.
I know a thing or two about Microsoft. And here's what where Microsoft fits in. We're talking about who's making money. NVIDIA, obviously, we know they're making money off of it. It's there, like Gene just said, in the print. Microsoft, here's how they want to make money. It's by selling that Copilot tool that just screwed up to businesses. Now, that doesn't mean people are going to be at work, you know, generating images and horrible things. That's kind of a fun side project. What Copilot is really meant to do is make you work more productive, work better. But there have also been worries it just doesn't live up to the hype. It's very expensive, $30 per user per month. Multiply that by a huge organization. It's a lot of money that Microsoft has.
And Steve, it takes a boat. I'll go back to you. It takes a boatload of energy, which is what I cover, obviously, to run these things. And I think the reason I bring this up, and I'm not saying this will happen, it's not for me to say it, and the future will tell, which is this. Everybody's buying these stocks, and maybe they keep going up and making everybody rich, and that's fantastic. But if there comes a day when they can't get this stuff right, when they keep screwing up like this, and we get a headline, and Gene, I'd love to hear your comment on this, too. We wake up to a headline that says Microsoft cancels plans for 3 AI data centers because they realize they're not going to have the growth they thought they would. If that happens, NVIDIA and Supermicro will fall 25%
and
in one day.
It doesn't feel like that's happening anytime soon.
No, it may not.
And because the reason why is because there's so much activity. Where Microsoft also benefits is other non-Microsoft companies doing AI things are using Microsoft's cloud to run it, too. So Microsoft,
what does that mean?
AI stuff, running AI applications in the cloud, whether it's Facebook, whether you name a company, a random startup getting into AI, a lot of them are using the cloud business from Microsoft Azure in order to run that stuff. So we're seeing actually a reacceleration of the money that that they're making from the cloud because of that. So all this hype and excitement is, even if they fail at it, at least in the near to medium term, they're still printing money there, especially in cloud, that's helping them grow market share. That's not nothing.
No, it's not. And Gene, and the reason, what I said may not ever happen, right? This growth could go on forever, but my job sitting here doing this for 25 plus years through the internet bubble and subprime and everything is just to say, what if that thing that you don't think or no one thinks could happen actually happens?
Appreciate you being the adult in the room here, Brian.
I don't know about
that. I would
that.
Go back to a comment that was made on CNBC from the CEO of Klarna, the buy now, pay later company, last week. They implemented an AI chatbot for their customer service. In 1 month, 2.3 million interactions, that was 70% of their customer service, scored equally with humans and did it in 2 minutes versus 11 minutes for the humans. And the crazy part is, if that's not good enough, is that they said that this potentially could replace 700 people. That's after doing it for 1 month. When I look at what's going on with Microsoft today, when I think about what's happened with Google, and then when I see some of the substance that's going on with all these applications, it makes me believe that we are going to enter a 3 to 5 year bull market. I want to be level-headed about this, but I think we're going higher because of AI.
And there's some mistakes here. Let me give you one personal example. Okay. I was on vacation a couple weeks ago. I needed to change my Hilton reservation. They, in their app, they use an AI chatbot.
Yes, they do.
The AI chatbot couldn't even figure out how to change my reservation. You would think for an AI chatbot customer service agent, the very bare minimum would be to cancel or change a reservation. So you get to the new, we're at the new press zero moment where you want to talk to a human being. So it's long ways to go. It is impressive. But again, we're 95%. Yep. I think that's how I would describe it.
And I know Klarna, Sebastian. I was his first US TV interview. I've had dinner with him. But I do worry, Gene, if that chatbot one day were to like go crazy and say something completely inappropriate.
By the way, do that now.
Send some, you know what I mean? I'm just to your point, Gene and Steve, thank you both very much. We got to go. I'm just trying to point out to the audience that there's one side going one way and a lot of other stuff on this side, and we'll see where it ends up in the middle. But a great discussion, and we appreciate it, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's take a look at what happened here Monday today. And we had gains across the board, all the major averages up, but what's not on the list are the small caps. They were actually the best performer, the Russell 2000, up 0.7%. By the way, the small caps, which we've talked a lot about the last few months, outperforming the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 over the last month. Inside the market, your stud and dud du jour, the big winner of the day, Dexcom, up nearly 10%, the big decliner, Brown-Forman down about 7%. Let's get a quick take on the futures. See which way tomorrow may go. Slight red on the screen. All right, up next, former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin rescuing, theoretically, New York Community Bank. Ranking House member on Financial Services Committee Maxine Waters will weigh in. Plus, a former Google employee charged with stealing secrets for China. Eamon Javers with the big breaking story next. All right, welcome back. If you missed it, it was a crazy day for New York Community Bank and its investors. Now, earlier today, the stock started selling, and then it sold some more, and then it sold some more. And at one point, it was down over 40% before being halted. But then, a bit of a rescue. Former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin leading a $1 billion investment into the bank that sent shares back higher. In all, a nearly 50% swing in New York Community Bank stock today. So begs the question, what exactly is going on here? CNBC's Leslie Picker is here and has the answer. Leslie.
Yeah, Brian, a fascinating turn of events for New York Community Bank Corp, inking a deal for $1 billion from a group of investors led by former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin's firm, Liberty Strategic Capital. Those investors buying common and convertible preferred stock at $2 per share. Investors will also get a 60% warrant coverage to buy more stock with the exercise price of $2.50. A bit of background on how this all came together. According to people familiar with the matter, Secretary Mnuchin had been involved here, diligencing NYCB for a while now. I'm told Jeffries approached a select group of investors with the prospect of a capital raise on Sunday, and we're told that a lead investor, Mnuchin's firm, had put up $450 million. Ultimately, investors, including Hudson Bay Capital, Reverence Capital Partners, Citadel, among some others, had decided to invest alongside Mnuchin for a total infusion of $1 billion. I'm told that putting former comptroller of the currency, Joseph Otting, in the CEO role and revamping the board was a huge boost of confidence for investors as well. Now, the price per share of $2 was finalized intraday after the stock plummeted. It's a premium to the lows of the day, but below any level that NYCB has ever closed at since the late 90s. Still, the stock is reacting positively, up 7.5% ultimately by the end of the day, because investors believe that the equity stabilizes the bank, whereas the stock moves prior to this announcement were more reflective of a likelihood of failure, Brian.
Leslie Picker, a busy day for you, and we appreciate it, Leslie. Thank you very much. Well, all this coming on nearly the one-year anniversary of the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. That was a collapse that triggered more banking fears, which then brought down a couple of other high-profile regional banks. That also triggered a bit of a run on many smaller banks as people pulled their money out of them and put them into bigger banks. J.P. Morgan Chase shares, for example, hitting a record high today. And we've seen larger bank stocks outperform the smaller ones lately. But America needs smaller banks, particularly in areas underserved by the bigger players. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about banking. Let's talk about housing and other big topics with House Financial Services ranking member Congresswoman Maxine Waters, who represents the great district of my birth. Congresswoman Waters, it's great to have you back on. Thanks for joining us. I thought we were done with regional bank failures.
Well, let me just say, as I listened to you when you were coming on, and you mentioned what had happened with Silicon Valley Bank, and you said other banks, of course, other banks being Signature and First Republic. I have been using that as a lesson as we talk about the need for banks to have greater capital. Now, we're resisting the fact that Basel III Endgame has indicated that banks need to increase their capital. Banks are fighting it. But I think when we look at banks, whether they're regional banks, particularly the big banks, they must have the capital to protect not only the depositors, but investors, et cetera, et cetera. And what happened with Silicon Valley Bank should be a lesson, a recent lesson to all, let alone what happened back with the Dodd-Frank reform that we went through.
Do you worry that you can worry about it, but you also, as the ranking member, you could probably do something about it, Congresswoman. Do you worry that the big banks, not picking on any one of them, JPM, Bank of America, you name it, are getting too big. I mean, they were called too big. Now they're much bigger than when they were called too big.
Well, I think you're right. And some of us have been talking about too big to fail for quite some time. And we have looked at, you know, a number of them, learning more about them. And we believe that not only are they too big to fail, but we've got to stop these mergers. The proposed merger that's before us now, we believe, falls in the category of big banks that could end up, you know, basically taking care of the banking needs of all of this country, five or six of them. Mm-hmm. And we don't want that kind of consolidation because we do see that as too big to fail. And we have to be careful. Yes, we don't mind taking a look, as we are doing, to see what we should do and could do about stopping consolidation. And one of the things we must do is resist mergers right now.
So it sounds like you're saying under your watch, the era of bank, or maybe not huge bank, but even large bank deals, maybe DOA.
Oh, absolutely. I'd like that to be something that I'm given credit for participating with.
All right. Switching topics. One that is probably a little more impactful, especially people in your district in Los Angeles, and that is housing. During today's hearing on monetary reports and other things, you cited the lack of affordable housing as one reason inflation is up, which is accurate. I mean, housing in L.A., as anybody here knows that lives there, is spectacularly expensive. But how do we get more homes built?
Well, in addition to the federal government playing its role and giving more money to help build affordable housing, I think that we've got to make sure that our locals understand exactly how to manage that money, exactly how to have permitting and licensing that is expedited in ways that does not increase the cost of housing. I think we are looking at making CDBG, the community development monies, available for the development of housing. Instead of using CDBG money for a lot of little different programs, we'd like to direct that toward housing. I have three big bills that we're talking about that we think could end homelessness forever. So we're on it. This is a top of our agenda, and we're not going to take a backseat on this. We're not going to stop, you know, trying to force others that have some role in helping to develop affordable housing. We're going to put a lot of pressure on. As a matter of fact, we have asked and we're asking that the president put it in his State of the Union message.
Yeah, okay, it might be, and that's tomorrow night. But Congresswoman, you know this as well. Even if Maxine Waters wanted to do something and the federal government wanted to back it or help back it, whatever it might be, you've got these little regional groups and homeowners associations and city councils in many cities, not just in your district, but all over the country. They'll say, nope, not here.
Well, nope, not here starts with the Republicans. They don't want to see homelessness taken care of. They talk about it, but they don't want to spend money. They want to do budget cuts. Now, when you couple that with what you just alluded to, the local groups and the homeowners associations, that's not in my backyard groups, it's all a problem. But we've got to confront it for real. We've got to call it for what it is. We've got to be more vocal on it. We've got to help educate people. We're going to be holding briefings with all of the members of the House of Representatives, yeah, at least on the Democratic side, to help them understand what Section 8 is all about, what, you know, the kind of investments that are needed in order to not only get more, but to put money into those areas, yeah, where affordable housing can be developed.
Congresswoman, I was going to leave politics out of it, but since you said that, I will ask you one final question. In the New York Community Bank rescue is Steven Mnuchin. Obviously, he was the former Treasury Secretary under Trump. Citadel, run by Ken Griffin, one of the most powerful Citadel Securities, the different arms. But still, do you have a problem with them basically buying into and or semi-controlling this bank?
Well, I have to be concerned about Mnuchin. He came from the banking community when Trump picked him up. And evidently, he is about what can banks do to create more programs and more opportunities to make more money. And so, yes, I think that he has to be watched. He has to be understood. This is where he makes money, and that he will be doing things that we probably disagree with.
Congresswoman Maxine Waters from California's 43rd. Congresswoman, I look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks out in California again. Take care. Thank you.
Well, please do.
All right. All right.
And watch what we're doing and watch the efforts that we're making to do everything we can to get affordable housing.
Well, we'll talk more about it. You know how to find me, tall and loud, easy to spot.
Okay.
Congresswoman,
right.
Thank you. All right. You take care. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
All right. Coming up, can the president sell his economy at his high-stakes State of the Union address? We'll talk about it with a shock new poll next. Yeah, you got it. We got a bonus TNT for you. The Biden administration will reportedly request a 1% jump in defense spending in next fiscal year's budget. That is about $10 billion lower than expected amid caps from last year's debt limit deal. Cuts to the spending include reduced F-35 jet orders as well as less money for R&D. Still, total military spending for 2025 expected to exceed $849 billion. Meantime, tomorrow, just over 24 hours from now, President Biden set to deliver his delayed State of the Union address. He is expected to touch on a number of accomplishments and issues. But one point that is expected to be front and center, of course, and why we cover it, is the economy. Listen, stock markets seeing record high after record high. The S&P 500 up 34% since the president took office, not to mention lower unemployment, higher home prices, and easing, but still high, but easing inflation. Despite, though, those accomplishments, the economy and its story is not resonating with many Americans. Not my opinion. If you take a look at the latest polls from the New York Times and Siena, 40% of voters surveyed. Now, again, it's a poll. Take whatever you want from it. That the former president's policies helped them, while only 18% say the current presidents have helped them. Turning to the broader economy, things aren't looking much better for the current president. 74% of voters rate the economy is either poor or only fair, while the rest say it's good or excellent. So, will President Biden really be able to sell his economic message tomorrow? And if so, how? Joining us now is founder and CEO of Operation Hope and a CNBC contributor, John Hope Bryant, and American Action Forum president and former director of the Congressional Budget Office, Douglas Holtz-Eakin. And John, I got to start with you and apologize on behalf of New Jersey, because it's been raining. Like, somebody build an ark. So you were supposed to be here on set, but you took the, I don't see how any planes are getting in. So anyway, good to see you either remotely. If you were to sit down with the president and give him a couple sentences of advice, a little pep talk, what would you say?
I'd say that, first of all, great to see you, Brian, and I will get there because I never give up, and neither does this country. We're not a country, we're an idea. I'm going to make it whatever we want, which leads to the point. I'd say to the president, nobody remembers what you said, what you wrote, what you did. They remember how you made them feel. I'd say that you need to thread the needle between a Ronald Reagan and a Bill Clinton, or I'm going to flip that and say a Bill Clinton with more of a centrist message with, and a Ronald Reagan inspiration message. Really, you need to become the chief inspiration officer for the country. People are, you know, you said in a previous interview with the congresswoman that people aren't feeling the love. Well, that's because we had the lowest interest rates in mankind's history for a decade and a half almost, 1-3%. You'll never see that again. That came as a result of 2008 economic crisis and recovery thereof. So interest rates are up, gas prices and food is up, even though it's coming to come down. It hasn't hit yet. So you need tabletop economics here. You got to get to somebody's table, the kitchen table, bring the IRS over, bring the Department of Commerce over, say, look, how much do you make? I make $38,000 a year. I'm a teacher. How many kids do you have? 3 kids. Okay, come over here. Sit down. Do they qualify for something? Yes, earned income tax credit. Okay, great. How much is that worth? Well, they qualify for $6,500, a bonus for working. Mm-hmm. Great. By the way, it's retroactive for 3 years. Did you know that? No, I didn't. That's financial literacy, by the way. Okay, that's almost $20,000 for somebody making 38 to 50. It's actually about 20 grand. Are you happy yet? By the way, they can only be wired to a bank account.
Yeah.
So in the bank account for you. Okay, what else can we do for you? And okay, that's a down payment for a house. So let's reduce your debt. All of a sudden, now the lights are on. And by the way, Brian, people say, I hate rich people. No, you don't. You hate rich people till you become rich. What you hate is a game system where you don't think that it works for you.
Yeah. That's well said. Doug, I want to go to you. I think here's the president's greatest problem. The rate of inflation is coming down. We know that, right? And sometimes there's a mix up in the words, but the problem is that the voter is smart. Doesn't matter what your education level is. You know that the burger that was $12 is now $18. You know that the rent that was $900 is now $1,200. You know that your electric bill, which was $75, is now $150. You don't give a you know what that the rate has gone down. All you know is everything you're paying for is higher. Is it the president's fault? No, but the voter's going to blame somebody.
Yeah, they're painfully aware of this. And prior to even the Biden administration, it was clear in the polls that when people talked about getting inflation under control, they meant getting food prices back to what they used to be, getting gas prices.
It's not going
to
happen, Doug. Tell them right now. It ain't going to happen.
You know that. I agree with you, but it's the problem they face. And in shelter inflation, still 6% year over year. So the inflation issue is the one that's really the Achilles heel. What they have to avoid doing is focusing on all these macro figures, stock market, unemployment rate. Yeah, the unemployment rate's been low during his tenure. That means everyone went to work in 2021. They went to work in 2022, and they got further behind. Real wages fell. Nobody's happy about that. And they're up against that deficit. Now, that turned around a little bit last year. His numbers are slightly better, but they have a big problem with that history. And his programs, if he starts touting his programs, he's got to remember that.
Yeah.
Talks about manufacturing, talks about construction. Most of the economy's somewhere else.
I agree. And John, I don't. And by the way, Dan Shulman says hi. Just wanted to say, I just got a text. Okay, yeah. here's the thing, okay? And I know everybody's focused on the age issue. I'll let everybody else duke that out. The State of the Union is a scripted speech. Everyone knows that. The president's going to have to sell it to the American people directly in various formats. I don't know. Did you just hear our interview with Congresswoman Waters? She's 4 years older than the president. She comes on. She does a remote interview. She has no idea what I'm going to ask her. We didn't discuss it beforehand. We just go boom, 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 boom. She fires off the answers. She was born in 38. President was born in 42. I think, and I only bring that up because the president's going to have to. He's going to have to get in front of the American people in a variety of formats. Is he not or no?
Of course. Like, he's not the, just real talk, he's not the best marketer in the world. He's not the best, I say this with great respect, speaker in the world. He did, though, bring us back from the breach from the pandemic. He has tamed inflation without the economy imploding. He has created infrastructure for the country to make us a competitive nation again and brought the CHIPS Act back so we can control our technology. And so the macro things, as my colleague said, are moving in the right direction, but folks are not feeling that yet at the kitchen table. But I think that interest rates are gonna come down a little bit over the summer, Brian. And when that happens, it doesn't matter how much it is, that's an indication that things are easing. And I think that's what people need, to have a psychological shift. You combine that with what Operation Hope does on the ground. I would tell people, we're going to make America a 700 credit score country because all the problems were in 580 credit score neighborhoods. Poor whites are riding at the ballot box. Black and brown people, we hope, don't ride in the streets at some point. But that's where all the problems are, Brian. If you get the credit score up 100 points, you have nirvana, because 700 credit score communities don't riot. They go shopping. And you can get the credit score up. That's what we're doing at home.
Yeah.
And so I think you got to be practical. You have to be inspirational. But you also have to be not just PhD, but PhD do too. Here's what I'm doing for you tomorrow.
So, Brian, John is a better speechwriter than me. He's clearly a better inspirational leader than I am. But I would be careful if I was the president of overselling the CHIPS Act. We haven't built a fab yet. I'd be careful about overselling the infrastructure investment. We haven't built that stuff yet. I control drug prices. They haven't lowered a drug price yet. Everything they talk about, people sit on the ground don't see it. They're like, what is he talking about? This hasn't happened. They have to be real careful how they sell this.
That's a fair point. Well, and by the way, they tweeted out briefly today that tune into the State of the Union 2023. They need to get a little better control of the social media side. But either way, a very good conversation. John, we'll see you on set next time. Doug, you're welcome anytime as well. Thank you both very much. All right. On deck, how one of the world's greatest economies is in the middle of a slow rolling collapse. That's next. Is that new? I like it. All right. They never tell me about this stuff. Let's get out of your last call watch list, and it's all about gold. Over the past week, gold has climbed more than 5% with five consecutive sessions of new highs, stretched that out since the start of the year. And you can see how abrupt and drastic this rally is. Over the past year, gold has jumped more than 15%. And our friends at Bespoke say this recent movement is highly unusual. The gold ETF, GLD, hitting its most overbought level in history at yesterday's close at more than three standard deviations above their 50-day moving average. Bespoke is labeling GLD as extremely overbought. If you own it, just something to, you know, keep an eye on. All right, moving on. Let's talk about the continued decline of one of the world's great economies. No, not China. Germany. For a few years now, we have been reporting, often on the ground in Germany, around the country's growing economic pain that has mostly been caused by high energy costs. High electricity and natural gas prices are a massive input cost for German manufacturers. So if they pay more, they have to charge more, which makes their products less competitive to sell around the world. And while German power costs, yes, have come way down off their highs of just after Putin invaded Ukraine, they are still some of the highest in the industrialized world. Case in point, yesterday, it's just one day, but yesterday, wholesale electricity prices were about $90 per megawatt hour in Germany. Compare that to $67 in the UK, $17 here, and just $7 in Spain. Now, because those costs, demand for power, and not just in Germany, but across Europe, has dropped a lot. Much of that is companies either scaling back or shutting down German industrial production. In fact, that is down 7 months in a row. And yeah, natural gas costs have come way down from their highs, but are still five or even six times higher than what we pay here. Now, according to multiple people I have spoken with who have either had direct conversations with German leadership or spoken with people in German organizations, this is leading some in Berlin to quietly start to wonder if they may ultimately have to go back to Russian gas if the Nord Stream pipeline is ever rebuilt. Let's talk about all this with Robert Bryce, longtime energy journalist and producer of a new docuseries called Juice: Power, Politics, and the Grid. Robert, I like your stuff. Thanks for coming on. It's not all just about energy, but man, Germany really screwed it up.
You know, Brian, if I were a better Christian, maybe a better Catholic, I'd feel sorry for him. I don't. I'm just not that compassionate. They drove themselves into the ditch, and they did it on purpose. I mean, you know, you just can't, I hate to be this harsh, but you just can't fight stupid. Here's a country that has shut down their nuclear plants despite the lack of natural gas. They've spent something like $500 billion now on this energy vendor, which has just been a massive failure. And now they're paying the price. And I was just looking at some numbers from IEA. Overall electricity demand last year in Germany, Brian, went down 4.8%. That's a proxy for the economy as a whole. And in the first half of last year, industrial output for any energy-intensive industries went down 13%. This Germany is not just deindustrializing; they're going to drag a lot of Europe down with them.
Yeah, and you know, listen, it's not entirely. I don't want to be like other channels. Everyone just agrees. I'll play the bad guy, I guess, to you, which is that Germany. It's not all the decisions they made. I mean, unless they did something we don't know, they certainly did not blow up the Nord Stream pipeline. I get it was shutting off or shut off before it was basically blown up. But at the same time, I will say that tying literally and figuratively, Bob, tying everything to that Nord Stream Putin pipeline dream, that if you go back in history, you'll say that's where you really blew it.
Well, there's no
literally,
doubt
I guess.
There's no doubt about it. And that's a point we make in our new docuseries, Juice, Power, Politics, and the Grid. This was a decision Germany made to tie themselves to Russian gas. And remember, the Russians, and this is very clear, and it was the record shows this, and I've written about it on my Substack, that the Russian government funded a lot of the anti-fracking rhetoric in Germany and around Europe, that now fracking in these countries for natural gas is still illegal. So you mentioned the wholesale price. I was just looking at the residential prices in for electricity in Germany. They're now about 45 cents a kilowatt hour. That's three times what I pay here in Texas for electricity. So the entire industrial economy in Germany is declining. Again, according to the IEA, you've seen just these massive declines in chemicals, paper, steel, aluminum. And when these smelters close, they don't reopen. So This deindustrialization, I fear, is just going to continue, and it's being caused by these mistakes that were made and not paying attention to energy security.
Yep, and we'll let you go. Welcome back anytime, and I'll tell you this much. It's you look at that, and you think, where do they go from here? Probably bullish for America. Robert Bryce, appreciate it. Thank you very much. Check out the new
documentary. Thanks a million,
Brian. All right. A lot of that manufacturing, folks, is going to come here. Coming up, Tesla superchargers just got a whole lot busier. So Joanna Stern says you may want to get in line to power up. All right, we all know when it comes to charging EVs, the Tesla network dominates everybody. But Ford just became the first automaker to roll out an adapter to allow non-Tesla EV users to use the charger. And the Wall Street Journal's Joanna Stern dared to test it. In her Ford Mustang Mach-E, she rolls up to a supercharger, no doubt, to the curious stares of the Model S-ers. Did they treat you with kindness and dignity?
I wore a Tesla hat at some of them just to show solidarity. Smart. And try to blend in. Yeah. I mean,
except
you
had
a
Ford badge on the back of the car.
I actually slapped a Tesla sticker on there as well. So they had no idea, Brian. They had just no idea.
You know what I'm talking about, though. You're like the interloper into their world that's been just theirs for years.
I will say I was worried about this. It went better than I expected. Nobody slashed my tires, so it went well. I am worried about this in the future because, yes, this now means that more non-Teslas are starting to charge at superchargers. Ford is just the first. GM, Volkswagen, Mercedes, Volvo, all of these brands have partnered with Tesla to get the supercharger accessibility. And if you know about the pain of charging your car at a non-Tesla EV charger, you are going to want to know that this is a very good experience.
And was it relatively fast? Does the adapter slow it down at all?
Hard for me to make that apples to apples comparison, but it was faster for me to charge at a Tesla station than down the street at an EVgo station. I tested my Mustang there, charging from 20% to 80% at both of those stations, and it was about 10 minutes faster at Tesla, and it was cheaper at Tesla.
Yeah, they nailed it. And I think if they get more crowded, though, let's just hope that everybody stays calm, right, Joanna? Just stay calm if you're iced out by a non-Tesla EV.
And I'll say, just to make matters worse, and I won't get into the details here, but what makes matters worse is because of the port placement on the car, you end up taking two spots. I'm worried. I'm worried for myself.
And so you're here. You're alive. Everybody's safe. We'll see how it goes. We love the story. Real world stuff. Joanna, great as always. Thank you, everybody. Folks, if you're on the East Coast, be careful. It's pouring rain. We'll see you tomorrow, I hope. Take care.